Street Official Black Music Month.
Street Official Real Talk.
Real Talk.
Never would have made it. Never could have made it without you. I would have lost it all. But now I see how you were there for me, and I can say, never would have made it. Never could have made it without you. I would have lost it all. But now I see how you were.
Real talk. Real talk.
All right, everybody, we are getting back to Black Music Month. It's June, and we are trying to do everything we can to cover all the different genres of music that black folks have either originated or influenced. As well, we're trying to break things into different regions. Like I tell you, it's definitely a pleasure to have this gentleman online with me today. And, you know, we normally do rap and hip-hop and whatever else is considered to be somewhat in the mainstream. But I got to tell you, I got somebody who's definitely in the mainstream and from a genre you probably won't even say that you would think to hear on this show. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
My name is Marvin Sapp.
Street Official Real Talk.
There's no question of your greatness, no searching of your power. Oh, the wonder of your glory. To you, 40 years is but 1 hour. Your knowledge is all-encompassing. To your wisdom, there is no end. Oh, for you alone.
I was telling Marvin a second ago that we have something to celebrate, and I'm going to let him go ahead and explain. And Marvin, I'm going to tell you, if you're humble, we're going to pull that out of you today. So we're going to test you today, believe me.
Well, what has happened is that our record, the song that I wrote, Never Would Have Made It, which has crossed over into the mainstream market, has become the longest-running number one single across musical genres ever in the history of music business. And it's just an exciting moment to be able to eclipse a milestone that has been held since 2000. And now our record has come on board, and we've lapped it by at least 3 weeks now. So it's really exciting.
And, you know, and just so the folks know, you know, I was talking to Marvin a second ago and saying, I think the title of his album actually kind of sums up, you know, why a song like this can mean so much these days. Title of the album is called Thirsty. And Marvin, I'm going to let you explain what you explained to me a second ago about your meaning of thirsty.
Well, you know, my meaning of thirsty is, and I've said to you just a few moments ago, that, you know, everybody, you know, with the song Never Would Have Made It, all of us have had Never Would Have Made It moments, no matter what walk of life we come from. If we're in the church or if we're in that world, out in the secular world, you know, all of us have had Never Would Have Made It situations that we felt like giving up on and throwing in the towel. But, you know, God or high powers, they're all the time just to keep us encouraged and strengthened and looking forward and looking up. But in order for us to get there, we had to be thirsty for it. We had to have a passion, a desire to want to draw near in the midst of adverse and troublesome situations. So that's what thirsty is all about.
What we've been trying to do is actually look at all the different genres and actually look at, you know, the regions where they come from. And I was having a conversation with David Banner, who's actually going to represent the South. Mm-hmm. Now, he comes from Mississippi. You know, we were sitting down having a conversation, just having a man-to-man conversation Saturday night.
Right.
You know, and I got to tell you, man, you know, it's funny how songs like, you know, Never Would Have Made It. And I'm going to be honest with you. I try to duck and dodge these kind of songs, man, because when I say that, is so powerful that sometimes I'm not prepared for it emotionally and don't want to necessarily give in.
Yeah, it'll bring the punk out of you, won't it? I know you're trying to be.
I'm trying to find a subtle way to say that.
Down, won't it?
Man, I'm telling you, it is. You know, I was telling Banner the other day. I said, you know, man, I don't frequent church too much, but it's more of a psychological issue. You know, when I was five, my father passed away.
Right, right.
And so, I was about four and a half. So my first recalling of being in the church was going to see my father laying in a casket.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I walk into the church, man, I become kind of overwhelmed with a little bit of emotion. And then all of a sudden you hear a song like Never Would Have Made It.
And you know it's funny? Let me tell you, man, it's not really funny, but it's just so appropriate that you brought up the fact that at the age of five your father passed, because this song was actually written the Sunday after I eulogized my father.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why, you know, so many people can connect to it, because it deals with, you know, honestly, man, my dad was my hero.
Yes, sir.
And he was a singer, and growing up, you know, watching him sing and then stepping into those shoes, and, you know, taking it to the next level, if you will. And, you know, now, you know, I'm not just his son, but I'm his pastor, and then got the responsibility of eulogizing him. And I came to church that Sunday and just stood up in the pulpit, man, with tears rolling down my face. And I just started singing the words, I never would have made it, never could have made it without you. I'd have lost my mind, but now I see how you've been there for me. And after this, I'm going to be stronger, wiser, and better. And that's why I say it's just so apropos, if you will, that, you know, you brought up your dad, because the only reason why this song came to be, I believe, is because of the loss that I experienced from my dad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I want you to start crying now. Keep it together.
Hey, man, don't get me started, man. You know, and that was the funny thing, you know, sitting down talking with Banner, and we were talking to a couple of the young cats, man, and we were just saying how we, you know, especially us as black men, you know, right. we're taught to suppress so much, man.
Yeah.
And sometimes we bottle up, and it's almost like a shaken bottle of Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And when you pop the lid comes off in various ways, you know what I mean?
Yep. We explode in various different ways, yeah.
Yes, sir.
But, I mean, you know, it is like that, you know, because, again, you know, we raised up by our moms. Our moms are teach our girls to be ladies. And, you know, mothers, even though they do a great job raising us, you know, they can't teach us how to be real men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they just say, stop all that crying, man up, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, it's just a different day, man. It's a different day, you know, and, you know, being from the Midwest and, you know, having my father in my life, but my mother and father were divorced when I was 10. So, you know, the blessing is my father's from Florida, my mother's from Mississippi. My mom had a great job. My father owned a business, and he just moved his business a block and a half down the street.
Wow.
So that he could stay close. He owned the dry cleaners, so he could stay close to his boys, man, rather than packing up, going back to Florida.
Yes, sir.
And, I don't know, man. My thing is, you know, our music speaks to so many different people and so many different individuals. It's funny. I go on YouTube, and it tickles me, because you can see kids 2 years old singing Never Would Have Made It.
Wow.
And then you'll see adults, you know, in their 50s and 60s singing Never Would Have Made It. So it's crossed genres, it's crossed ethnicities, it's crossed age barriers, and I think it's going to be here a long time.
And there's a reason why I wanted to speak to you, you know, about the passion of not only your music, but music out of the Midwest and black music in general. So I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to go ahead and give me your best answer in this. But, you know, what does Black Music Month mean to you?
Oh, man, Black Music Month is something very, very special to me, because it gives us an opportunity as artists, and not only as artists, but as listeners, to try to experience different aspects of what we are as individuals. African Americans in general have always been passionate people, but they've always been artsy. They've always been musical. They've always been creative. We had to be. So Black Music Month really speaks to the creativity of the urban community and how we need to tap into it, and not only that, but take it to another level, you know, in lyrical content, in musicianship, just all the way around.
And Marvin, you know, I want to ask you this. You know, now what does it mean for you to come out of the Midwest, and what does the Midwest bring in terms of influence? And you can, you, if you want, you can only speak to gospel. If you want to speak to gospel, blues, hip hop, and whatever else,
well,
you know,
I
of the Midwest.
Doc, listen, it's the Midwest. You can name it, and you can look around. The Midwest has had some, and does have some of the best singers ever, from the Marvin Gaye's, not Marvin Gaye, he's from Texas, my bad, but from Smokey Robinson, from Diana Ross, from Stevie Wonder. On the secular side, the Jacksons, coming from Gary, Indiana, even to the gospel side, man, you got the Winans, you got the Clark Sisters, Fred Hammonds, you know, you got tons of great artists. Where I live in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you got the DeBarges, you got the L. DeBarges, you have Chico DeBarge, you got Al Green, who is being celebrated on the BET Awards this year. You got so many different great, great artists out of the Midwest. And I tell people all the time, man, it's something in the water. You got to get a glass of water from one of these five great lakes if you really want to sing. Because if you don't, you can't do it like we do.
Real talk. Real talk.
Things, you know, about the Midwest, and I'm trying to connect the dots, and you probably understand where I'm going with this. But you know, I was having a conversation with Teddy Riley, who's actually representing the East Coast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was saying that, you know, it's a shame because what's happened now, which I can't blame the schools for, but the kids aren't connecting the dots as to where their roots come from. And, you know, as much as I'm not going to give them necessarily a history lesson, I think that it's important, which is why I broke it into regions, which, you know, don't get me wrong. Corporate America breaks things into different genres and
absolutely
regions and whatever else. And it's been killing us, you know, to have things come down on a spreadsheet that separates blues from R&B,
right,
soul from, you know, whatever. You know what I mean? Because it used to be a time where music was just music. You had a
just
good song,
music,
it hit the radio.
Right.
Okay, now since we're in so many categories, you know, hip hop and R&B fit on one thing, blues fit somewhere else, and now what's happening is the kids are losing their sense of connection, why B.B. King means so much to Kanye West. You know, why it is that some of the hymns mean so much to, let's
say,
the Kirk Franklins, as well as the Jay-Z's. And what I mean by that is that, you know, a lot of our music has taught us how to be rebellious. It's
right.
Taught us how to be patient in times of, you know, where we could be desperate and really, you know, acting out on different things, you know. And what I want to find out, you know, is, you know, how do you feel about that when I say young folks have lost a sense of connection to their roots these days?
I totally, completely agree. And the reason why I do is because you see it every day. You know, everything, you know, even in the hip-hop world, you know, everything is about the bling. It's about the cash, it's about the cars, it's about the girls. And it used to be that our music, and I'm not saying it's not saying nothing now, but it's not saying what it ought to say. And there used to be a time when our music said things that that when you heard a love ballad, it was a real ballad. You know what I'm saying? You know, mm-hmm. music said things. And I have personally taken on the responsibility of trying to bridge, if you will, that whole concept of kids understanding our music, understanding the meaning of our music. And here in our city, my wife and I, along with our nonprofit organization, Great Inc., have decided to partner with the public school system here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and we're about to open the first ever in Western Michigan performing arts and technology school.
Wow.
Here in our city. It's called the Grand Rapids Ellington Academy of Arts and Technology, otherwise known as GREAT. And we're really, really excited about it, starting with 6th and 7th graders in the fall of 2008. And we're going to teach them about different aspects of music, understanding, you know, from the days of Duke Ellington up until now, you know, so that they can understand the migration of music and how it ended up spinning off into different genres. Because, like you said, it originally it wasn't like that. But if we don't go back and teach them or go back and try to reach them, they'll never understand. And that's why I'm indeed excited about the partnership that we have with us in our public school system.
Man, that's absolutely incredible, you know, and I commend you for reaching out and doing something like that. And, you know, and the funny thing, what I was trying to get at too a second ago, Marvin, you know, a lot of the soul that I carry, whether you catch me on a domino table or you catch me, you know, sitting in New Orleans having a drink or whatever I may be doing, a lot of that comes from what I learned from mom, dad, grandma, great grandma, et cetera,
right?
You know, and the same thing with music. You know, the music was just absolutely shared. And when I was a kid, you had to play an instrument. Now,
right.
The school made us play it, as well as,
right.
You know, if you was going to be cool, you had to have some kind of instrument or you had to sing. Something had to happen in your neighborhood, whether you were in the church or in the garage band or
right.
whatever else. Now, what I'm noticing, like I take my kid, for instance, man, you know, in the 80s, I used to, you know, be a turntable battleist or whatever. So my turntable, I got turntables everywhere you go around my house. I got a piano sitting in my home. My son won't touch that piano, man. He'll come for the keyboard so he can play a sample.
Right.
He won't pick up my bass. He wants the turntable and the keyboard. And that's cool. But
that's not musicianship.
But there you go.
You know, everything now is samples and everything now is beats and stuff. And the real musician is really being put out the pasture because everything now is, you know, I got an MPC at the crib. Everybody, you know, got the Pro Tools set up. You know, that's at the house. You know, I just bought the D3200. It's sort of like the by Korg. It's sort of like the 2480, but it's a 32-track piece by Roland. And, I mean, you know, the blessing is that my son, he plays the drums. He plays saxophone. My daughter plays violin. My other daughter plays the flute. But they don't go to public schools. They go to private schools where these things are offered to them. And that is the reason why my wife and I are doing the Grand Rapids Ellington piece, the school partnership, because that's the first place stuff is cut,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the school system. You know, as soon as the budget get low, they cut out the arts, and not realizing that the arts are what kept us in school,
mm-hmm.
you know, kept us encouraged, kept us strengthened. And again, real musicianship is going out the window. My son plays with the MPC. He plays with the with the Pro Tools, he knows how to, you know, track and all that. And he ain't but 13 years old, know how to do all that stuff. He saw me do it, so of course. But at the same token, you know, you got other young men out here that really don't understand that just because you can program, it doesn't make you a musician. It
right.
makes you a programmer.
Right.
And unless we reinstitute, if you will, real musicianship, and I kind of blame us. I ain't gonna lie to you. It's
exactly.
kind of our fault. Because, you know, I remember 18 years ago when I got into this industry, to fly a vocal, man, it took 2 hours because you had to splice the 2-inch tape and you had to, it was just, you know, we went to lunch just to fly vocals, you know what I'm saying? Now you could do it in 2 seconds. You just, you know, when we used to stack vocals, man, and it took forever to do that stuff.
Yes, sir.
But now, because of the computer, you know, they cheating. And that's all I can tell you. All this music is a bunch of cheating. They making millions of dollars off cheating. And it's unfair, however. You know, we really got to push young men and young women who want to go into this business, man. We got to let them know that you got to study the trends of the business, but you also got to be able to be a quality musician.
And with that said, I got a pretty easy question for you, but I'm sure you have some detail in this. How connected is the Midwest to the South?
Musically?
Musically and even culturally.
Oh, man. Are you kidding? You know, if you live in L.A., all your people came from Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in the New York area, everybody came from North and South Carolina. If you live in the Midwest, all your folks migrated from Mississippi.
Yes, sir.
Alabama. So, I mean, my mama lives in Mississippi right now. She's here visiting, but she lives in Forest, Mississippi. All my people are from Forest, Mississippi. So, and those that ain't in Forest, they live in Chicago and Detroit. And then once they retire, they go back. So everybody's connected to the South, man, especially if you're African-American up north. You know, the only reason why you got here, it ain't because they ran up here. It's because your mom and them decided to look for bigger and better things once they got of age and was tired of picking cotton in the South.
Real talk. Real talk. Real talk.
I never meant to call you in sorrow. Never meant to call you in pain. I'm the one who wants that nasty life.
Church girl, she was secular, not about the money. Those stuff was my checker, but I respected her. She hit me in the heart. A few New York niggas had dinner in the park, but she was there for me, and I was there for her.
Real talk. Real talk.
And with that said, you know, the migration, you know, after sharecropping kind of, you know, exposed itself, you know, folks started migrating out of Mississippi, like you said, Alabama, heading straight into Chicago, you know, and Chicago became kind of like this mecca for black folks, which, of course, brings along music, brings along religion, absolutely, brings along fashion, and then the Midwest puts its spin on it. And I'm bringing this up because, again, as much as we are going by region, I'm trying to connect some dots, you know. So when you come into Chicago and you listen to Chicago blues, very different from Delta blues, but Delta blues influences, you know, the Southern blues influences what happened in Chicago blues, but Chicago now has its own spin and twist to it. It's no different than the clothing and the language and whatever else. So I want
to. They just cousins.
There you go.
They just cousins. That's the best way to call it.
So when you think back to your childhood, man, who are some of the icons? And I know you named a few great singers that came out of, you know, the Midwest area, but who are some of the folks, like even now, that you hear record, whether you be, you know, listening to the radio or putting something on your iPod or whatever, who are some of the folks that you listen to and go, man, that's just a great record, you know, that comes from your area?
Oh, that comes from my area. Oh, man. Man, lately? Oh, goodness. That comes from my area. Of course, you know, Mr. Westock, anything he does, you know, from the Chicago area, he's sick. I mean, he's just sick. Like, he does some great, his concepts are great, you know. for a young guy. I mean, you know, what he does, he just does great work. You know, when I was growing up, though, you know, everything was old school. You know, you listened to the Shy Lights and stuff like that, you know. Of course, Teddy Pendergrass is one of my favorite singers in the world. Peebo Bryson, you know, just a lot of the old school cats, man, you know. In the gospel world, of course, you know, it would be the Marvin Winans, it would be, you know, the Andre Crouches, and, you know, just a lot of real old school cats who really understood, you know, strong lyrical content, trying to make sure that there was a message in their music, and make sure that the message was clear. It wasn't sedated, nor was it watered down. So, I mean, just, I can call a bunch of guys. Stevie Wonder, of course, just, I mean, anything Stevie does is just phenomenal. That's all I can tell you. So, I mean, it's a lot of great guys out there, a lot of great young guys coming up, too. I like Rashawn Patterson, man. I think he's a phenomenal singer, just unbelievable singer, man. And just, I had the opportunity to meet a young lady the other week. I was in California doing a concert, and I think it's Michelle Pharrell.
Rochelle Pharrell, yeah.
Pharrell, man. Yeah, she, man. Doc, is, I mean, that's real singing. I mean, the stuff she does with her voice, Doc, is just, it's scary. I sat there and watched her just do exercises, and I was like, you know, this is unfair. This is so unfair. But it just goes to show you where we are, though. And there's a lot of talented people coming on the scene, and hopefully, you know, things will get better and vocal talent will get better. And, you know, I still think they cheat, you know, when they sing through the Pro Tools thing and the pitch bender and making sure they own pitch and stuff. I think that's cheating, but you know, do it dry. Don't cheat. Just do it dry. Don't put no reverb on it, nothing. Let me hear how you sound when it's just you.
Oh, man. So, Marvin, you know, I want to ask you this, and this is kind of moving away from Black Music Month a little bit, but in saying, you know, how we want to try to appreciate all the different musics and genres and so on, you know, why is it that you think, you know, gospel and blues is now, you know, suffering based on popularity? What I mean by that is that, you know, like I said, you got a number one song out here across radio, across all genres, and yet, you know, gospel isn't necessarily being embraced, and it's even by Black folks. I'm saying just let's just look at Black audience. What do you think is going on that folks are not, you know, which you know, we used to pay dues, you know, going back X amount, you know, years ago, on Sunday at least, you know, your mama would put on something if you didn't go to church.
That's funny. You That's know, true. Man.
You know, you had to hear something. You know, I go places now, man.
You go hear old Happy Day every Sunday,
man.
You
hey.
Just knew it. She's gonna play Be Crockett. But you go hear old Happy Day on Sunday, wouldn't you?
Yes, sir.
You know what, man? I think, you know, believe it or not, you know, gospel is still the fastest growing genre of music as it pertains to sales. What it has done in the last 19, 20 years is just phenomenal. That, you know, it was unheard of to hear of a gospel artist selling gold or platinum. I mean, that was unheard of.
Right.
And now it's happening. I mean, it's not just happening, but it's happening often. So, you know, I appreciate the strides that we have made as a genre. I think one of the major challenges is now, you know, they're not getting up on Sunday, popping in a CD, especially when they could cut on the television and watch them sing it live, you know, on the Bobby Joneses and people like that, you know. I really do. I appreciate the strides, man. There was a time when you had to work a job and sing gospel music. Now, you know, you can make a living. You know, some have even gotten rich.
Yes, sir.
You know, doing gospel, doing what their conviction is. You know, so, you know, I don't know if we as a musical genre have been left behind. I just think that we made some strides, but we got much further than we need to go.
Well, Marvin, again, I'm going to tell you, man, it's definitely a pleasure having you on here. Is there anything you want the audience to know that maybe I haven't touched upon, whether it be about your career or about your region, anything?
No. If they've ever come to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I live, definitely look us up, MarvinSapp.com or my MySpace page, MySpace.com/theofficial Marvin Sapp page, or via the website lighthouseflc.com, and they can check out who I am and what we're doing, and definitely come and be a part of what we're doing as well.
Real talk. Real talk. Real
talk. I used to think that I could not go on, and life was nothing but an awful song. But now I know the meaning of true love. I'm leaning on the everlasting arms. If I can see it, then I can do it. If I just believe it, there's nothing to it.
God, show me the way, because the devil's trying to break me down. You know what the Midwest is, young and restless. Restless might snatch your necklace, and next these might jack your Lexus. Somebody tell me who Kanye West is. I walk through the valley of the shadow where death is. Top floor, if you alone, I leave you breathless. Try to catch it, kinda hard getting choked by the.
Yo, this is Marvin Sapp, and you're listening to me right now on Real Talk.
Straight official Real Talk.